Oh, wow. It's time for Dear Science, thanks to MOTAT, Auckland's Museum of Transport and Technology.
Kia ora, MOTAT, and kia ora, Marcus, who spoke to me earlier this morning. Now, it's Nobel Prize season, so Marcus and I spoke about the prize for medicine and physics, which we recently announced. We started with the prize for medicine for discoveries relating to hepatitis C, beginning with why the virus is such a threat to human health.
The hepatitis C virus is one of the most common causes of liver cancer. It's transmitted via blood. And although many people quickly clear the infection, some develop a sort of a chronic inflammation of the liver that slowly, sort of quietly destroys the liver over years, even decades. And that ultimately leads to cirrhosis or cancer. And so people often need liver transplantation, and often they don't survive. So this was known about for a long time, and about half a century ago, doctors certainly knew that recipients of blood transfusions were a much higher risk of liver cancer, liver disease. And in the late 60s, a guy called Baruch Bloomberg, who was at NIH, that's the National Institute of Health in the States, discovered the hepatitis B virus, not hep C, hepatitis B. And that won him a Nobel Prize in the mid-70s in medicine. But the hepatitis B virus didn't explain all the cases of hepatitis that were seen in patients who had blood transfusions. And so the Nobel Prize for this year went to three people who, over about 30 years, did a lot of work to identify the hepatitis C virus. And they showed it was responsible for most of the unexplained cases of hepatitis in blood transfusions. And they made it possible to screen blood donations for the virus. So making that process of giving blood and receiving blood transfusions an awful lot safer.
And now these guys spent three decades researching this, which is something I think is quite remarkable about these Nobel Prizes, as they really are, you know, awards for a lifetime's achievement.
That's right, and that's what this. Very occasionally, you get a Nobel Prize awarded for a stunning piece of work. So sometimes they're awarded to younger people for just an incredibly major advance in science, but. Very often they're given to people usually in their 60s, 70s, even 80s in the case of the Physics Prize, and for discoveries that were made and work that was done over a long period, usually over many decades. So it is sort of a lifetime award.
And so in terms of the discoveries that they've made about hepatitis C, how have these helped, I guess, society? That being the reason, I'm sure, for the award, you know, it's of some importance.
Yeah, so before they made these discoveries, receiving a blood transfusion. So let's say you had a terrible injury and you needed to receive a blood transfusion, or for whatever reason. Prior to these discoveries, it was a little bit like Russian roulette. You know, you didn't know whether you were going to get this hepatitis virus and ultimately end up with liver cancer or over a long period of time. And what the discoveries that these researchers have made enabled the screening of blood donations and the removal of blood donations which contain the virus. So as a result, transmissions through the blood supply is nearly eliminated. And that they've made blood transfusions safe. So if you need to go to hospital, if you need to receive a blood transfusion, you're not, especially in this part of the world or in the developed world, you're not necessarily worrying about getting tainted blood, getting hepatitis C from the blood. But it's not. This isn't a disease that's been eliminated. So. They also, the discoveries led to development of antiviral treatments that can now cure about 95% of hepatitis C patients. So combined with the blood screening, that saved probably millions of lives worldwide, which is, you know, a massive achievement. But still, about 71 million people currently worldwide are suffering from hepatitis C. And transmission does continue, primarily in developing countries. And the main transmission routes today are through contaminated medical equipment, through childbirth, where often the mother can be infected, and sharing contaminated injection needles. Mm. And so the World Health Organization estimated that about 400,000 people died of hepatitis C in 2016, mostly from cirrhosis and cancer. And an example in Egypt, which is one of the worst affected countries in the world, there are places in Egypt where 15% of the people are affected. And this started about half a century ago when needles were widely reused during a campaign to treat a particular disease. And I'm going to try and say this. I think it's schistosomiasis. I can't really say that. This is it's a parasitic disease. And they had a national campaign to try and eliminate this, but it involved a lot of needle sharing. And as a result, there were a lot of hepatitis C infections. And so Egypt's really trying to lead the way in combating the virus and using the sort of treatments that were developed by this research, the Nobel research.
Well, we better probably move on to the second Nobel sure. Prize topic that we're talking about now today, which is the one in physics. And this one was actually split in half, which I thought was interesting. The first being to Roger Penrose, a mathematician. Another crazy example of how many years of work that some of these people are being rewarded for. His work was in the 1960s, and he's now 89 receiving that award.
Yeah, he's getting on a bit. But, you know, he said he was interviewed and said that he doesn't really have any regrets about waiting so long to get this prize. He's 89. He said he knows some people who got the prize too early and it ruined their science. So he thinks he's about old enough right now.
That's great.
But yeah, so Roger Penrose, so this went 50-50, one half of the prize. And the prize is, you know, nearly $1 million or something like that. I can't remember, but it's a large sum of money. Mm. But the prize, half of it went to Roger Penrose, who is a pretty famous, he's a mathematician. He works in Oxford. He worked in Oxford. And the other half went to a pair of scientists, two astronomers called Reinhard Genzel from the Max Planck Institute and Andrea Ghez, I think her name is, and she works at UCLA, University of California in Los Angeles. And this is all to do with work about black holes. Penrose's half, I guess, was to do with really proving that black holes form and black holes exist. So this comes all the way back from Albert Einstein's work when he published his general theory of relativity in 1915. And that states that gravity arises when mass and energy change or warp the fabric of space and time. And that means that objects moving in space-time their trajectories can curve and move, effectively form orbits around massive bodies, like the Earth's orbit around the Sun. And that led to this idea very quickly that a point mass, or a mass that was very, very big and very small, would lead to something called an event horizon, which is a horizon around a mass or a body that from beyond which light can't escape. So light cannot come out from the body and escape through that event horizon. And this is an idea. This is what a black hole is. It is an incredibly massive object that has effectively zero dimensions. It's collapsed into nothingness, but it leaves behind this ultra intense gravitational field, And light cannot escape beyond a certain radius away from that mass. And so in the 60s, Penrose showed with really detailed mathematical rigor that the formation of a black hole was essentially inevitable, and the black hole would be indestructible, and it would just keep on growing as it devoured more and more things, devoured more mass. And so it didn't matter what you did, the horizon was always there, and it wouldn't break apart. It would only get bigger. And this was his sort of big contribution to the field. And the award really could be considered sort of a prize for his work, but also for Stephen Hawking's work. Now, Stephen Hawking died in 2018, and Penrose collaborated a lot with him. And his sort of key predictions, his key theories are framed in what are called the Hawking-Penrose theorems. And Stephen Hawking took a lot of his ideas and then pushed them forward into applied cosmology and the birth of the universe and things like that.
This might be ignorant of me, but did Stephen Hawking ever get the Nobel Prize, or can it not be awarded posthumously?
No, he didn't, and no, it cannot be awarded. It has to be awarded to a person who's alive, so it can't be awarded posthumously. And he never did get the prize. I mean, he was lauded and he was very eminent, but he never won a Nobel Prize. Mm. And so that's Penrose's work. The other two scientists, Andrea Ghez and Reinhard Genzel, showed that there was a black hole at the center of our galaxy, at the center of the Milky Way, and they showed through a lot of observations that it weighed about 4 million times about the mass of the sun. So it was incredibly big, incredibly massive object. And the one at the center of our Milky Way is known as Sagittarius A. And it weighs, like I said, about 4 million times the sun, times the mass of the sun. It's about 26,000 light years away. So in astronomical distances, it's actually relatively close to us. It's in the center of our galaxy.
Oh, don't say that.
Yeah, not that close. We're not going to fall into it anytime soon. But it's quite small. So it's black. It's a black hole, but it's really quite small. The event horizon, so you've got this incredibly big object. The event horizon would, in fact, fit within Mercury's orbit around the sun. So it's not a particular, astronomical scale, it's not a particularly big object. But it's really difficult to study because the center of our galaxy is sort of cloaked in lots of gas and dust and difficult to see through. So it's really hard to observe because we're looking through the plane of the galaxy as we're trying to observe it, and there's just lots of stuff that gets in the way. But these two scientists found a star. They were both looking at the same star, working independently. And they found a star that was the closest object they could find to the center of the galaxy. And what they did is they watched it move over several years. And they've sort of mapped the progress of this star as it orbited the black hole. And they were looking, they did this using infrared light. So the wavelength of the light was about 2 micrometers, so about 2 millionths of a meter, which is longer wavelength than the visible light that we use, that we see. But the light was able to penetrate through much of the gas and the dust, so that they could see this little star. In about 2002, the star sort of reached about the closest point to Sagittarius A, which is the name of the black hole. That was within about 20 billion kilometers, about 17 light hours of the center of the galaxy. And it was at that time it was traveling 5,000 kilometers a second, so that's moving pretty fast. It's about 3% of the speed of light. And then they watched it move, and then so by about 2008, so that's 6 years later, it had come again to that closest point, and so they had basically a full orbit of this star around the black hole at the center of our galaxy, and they could really then make detailed measurements of the size and the mass of this black hole, because if you see the orbit of something going around, just like if we watch the orbit of, say, the Venus going around the sun, we can infer information about the mass of the sun, the size of the sun, just by looking at that orbit. And that was the same for this case. watching these this little star fly around the black hole at the center of our galaxy, they could say, okay, this is this black hole is as massive as it is, and they really get a lot of detailed information out of that.
Andrea Ghez, the winner of that prize they were just talking about there, is the fourth woman to ever win a Nobel Prize in physics and the second in the past 3 years. So hopefully a sign that the times are changing within the Nobel Prize organisation, which in the past has been criticised for its lack of diversity. We'll be back with Dear Science next week, live in studio with Alan Blackman, perhaps with some more Nobel Prizes as they are announced.
Mind blown. That was Dear Science, thanks to MOTAT, Auckland's Museum of Transport and Technology.